Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. This is a special bonus episode of Patron Deities. As you may know, as I make my way through the Deities and Demigods book, I'm taking some time to do the non-human deities, and I am releasing these to all my patrons, not just those who backed at the level that would otherwise get you Patron Deities. Because these little guys, they don't necessarily fit into any of the pantheons that I'm going to talk about in depth, so I thought I'd do them one or two at a time and just release them as these little mini-episodes. Anyway, enjoy! So in the last non-human deities episode, I talked about Hrugek, the god of bugbears, and Grumsh, the god of orcs. And I said that Grumsh is actually pretty good. As the head of the orcish pantheon, he definitely adds some kind of conflict within an orcish culture. And today, I'm going to talk about two more non-human deities. Are they going to do the same thing? Let's find out. First up, we got Moradin. Moradin is the head of the Dwarven pantheon, and he is the god of smiths, and he forged the dwarves out of iron and steel and poured souls into them upon his magic forge. And my wife used to play a lot of Baldur's Gate, and I would be off doing one thing, you know, and she would be playing her game, so I wouldn't be able to see what she was doing, but I could just hear all the sound effects. And so I remember that grumpy dwarf going, "By Moradin's hammer!" all the time. And I kind of think that that's what there is to Moradin. Like, he's there to answer the question, "Oh, what does my dwarf say when he's startled?" instead of, "Oh my god!" He's kind of just about, that's it, is the problem. Because Moradin, I mean, look at Moradin. He is Dwarfy McDwarferson. If I told you, okay, go away and come up with a god of dwarves, but you only have 3 minutes to do it, you would come up with Moradin. You'd be like, "Oh, his name is Stonebeard McHammerax, and he forged the dwarves on his magic forge." Fine. I mean, I'm not saying that's what your voice sounds like. Just, he is exactly and only what you would expect the god of dwarves to be. And the frustrating thing about him is, if you take a look at the Dwarven pantheon, the whole lot of them are like this. So the other Dwarven gods include Clangeddin, the god of battle, Dumathoin, the god of secrets under mountains, and Abathor, the evil god of greed. But at least Dumathoin could have been interesting. The god of secrets under mountains, the god of delving too greedily and too deep, right? Dumathoin and Abathor seem like the guys who get dwarves into trouble. Wouldn't you rather know about the gods who get dwarves into trouble than the gods that merely reify every aspect of Dwarven culture that you already understand perfectly well? I'm going to return to this theme in a moment. But so that's Moradin. He is the dwarf god, god of dwarfing. He has a beard, he has a magic hammer, and he lives under the mountain. I mean, you know what he was like. You don't need to read this book to know what the god of dwarfs is like. He's exactly like the god of dwarfs. Speaking of, let's talk about Carlon Lorithian, the god of elves. Oh boy. Again, if I said, "Go and create me a god of elves," one thing you would probably do is say, "Oh, well, elves are a bunch of, you know, refined Neoplatonist aesthetes, I guess if we're using the high elf model, and they worship, you know, the prime mover. They worship an undefined first cause." But if we had to put a face in a pair of pirate boots, with dagged edges, no less, you know, I want somebody who could dress up in a Robin Hood costume, then you would say, "Well, okay, he's a master of all arts and crafts and lore and learning, and also the bow, and he has a magic bow, and yada, 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 yada." Right, fine. Corlon Lorithian, that's exactly what he's like. Could I, by the way, can I get one female deity in this mob? I mean, particularly, like, not to stereotype or anything, but if any culture's gonna worship a mother goddess, it's gonna be wood elves, right? It's gonna be some Galadriel-like bountiful lady of the forest. Since this book does in fact use the terms god and goddess, it appears that there is not a goddess in the entire Dwarven pantheon, and only one elven goddess is mentioned. Well, I mean, apart from Lolth. So, that really feels like an oversight. I mean, I'm not saying that most cultures have a balanced approach to gender in their pantheons, but it's usually more than this. In polytheistic cultures, obviously. I will say this about Corlon Lorithian. 2 points. First, pretty good name. Definitely sounds like the kind of name that an elven deity would have. I don't give more than any points for that because naming dwarf stuff is super easy. But getting elf stuff right is a little bit more difficult, and I think this one sounds okay. Corlon Lorithian. Yeah. It's long. It sounds fancy. Sounds like somebody would be going to a cocktail party and they'd say, "Did you know Corlon Lorithian's going to be there?" Secondly, description of places of worship, predictable, but some good ideas. So, for example, again, if I said, where do the elves worship? And you'd say, ah, they build no shrines. Instead, they meet in places of natural beauty. Yep, exactly. It lists natural geological formations or natural amphitheaters, and that's kind of good. Like, I was expecting a starry grove of mist-haunted oaks, so this is better than that. All right. And thirdly, it said that Corlun Lirithian defeated demons such as Lolth and banished them from the sunlit upper world into, I guess, into the Underdark, although I don't think that concept has been fully explored in the game at this point. And furthermore, that during the battle, Corlun Lirithian was wounded, droplets of his blood fell to the earth, and from those droplets sprang the first elves. That is an okay creation myth. Like, it's not fantastic, but it's pretty okay. And it's better than Corlun Lirithian singing the elves into being with his magical harp or some nonsense, which is frankly what I was expecting. So that's Moradin and Corlun Lirithian, and that's why you can see I'm not devoting full episodes to this chapter, because I do not think that I would enjoy it very much. Let's do one more. Should we do one more? Okay, let's do wood elves. Rilafane Ralathel, or Ralathel, the Leaf Lord. Okay, you are off to a bad start with the Leaf Lord. It's going to be hard for me to say the Leaf Lord with a straight face in a game. But I'll give you this. Although he sometimes appears as a green elf in bark armor, yada yada, with a magic bow, yada yada. Rilafane Ralathel is more commonly likened, it says, to a giant ethereal oak tree so huge that its roots mingle with the roots of every other plant in the world. Give me roots that mingle with the plants in other worlds, and you've got something. He is primarily concerned that all creatures have the opportunity to act out their roles in nature without abusing them, and so he's chaotic good. But there are some elves who are chaotic neutral, and they worship the same god as centaurs. Hey, cross-cultural deity, more bonus points. Skerrit the Forester, who we'll get to some other time. Is wanting all creatures to act out their roles necessarily good? It sounds kind of neutral, don't you think? I mean, this goes back to the point that James Bailey made in the main show in episode 51, which is that your role might be one that's harmful, right? You can see the wood elves really believing in the circle of life, and, you know, if the predator eats the prey, that's just how it goes, and if you some children stray into the woods and they get gobbled up by owlbears, well, an owlbear has to eat too, right? Although, they make the point that owlbears are invasive species that mess up local wildlife, so maybe the wood elves would hate the owlbears too. But if they get gobbled up by regular bears, that's just how it goes. Nature red in tooth and claw, you know, life must have life, all that stuff. You'd think they'd be into that. So that sounds chaotic neutral to me, although it's frankly not that chaotic either. I mean, what's more neutral than nature? Anyway, whatever. Rilafane Ralathel is a little bit better than either Moradin or Corlun Lirithian. He doesn't have any good evocative mythology like the drops of blood thing in Corlun Lirithian, but he's got some fun concepts. He is what you would get if I asked you to go away and come up with a wood elf deity and you spent 15 minutes doing it. Maybe. So here's my broader point. You should not be able to backform a culture's deities from that culture. Now, I understand if you are trying to sketch a culture in a short period of time, you know, without wasting a lot of words on it because you're not going to spend a lot of time there, sure. You know, we're only going to be in the dwarf city once, so the dwarfs worship, you know, Axie McLumphammer. I'm not into it. I don't think it's interesting. I would rather see some enigmatic stuff about the dwarven deities and, you know, get out the door. But particularly in the early years of D&D, when perhaps we may argue that there wasn't as much of a shared cultural understanding of elves and dwarves, maybe stuff that just reinforces the core themes is valuable. But for the most part, religions exist in tension with their culture's behavioral norms. They inform those norms, but they also stand against them in some ways. Take, for example, any culture ever and any religion ever. If you were given a detailed description of every aspect of a Christian society or a Buddhist society, and you were asked to figure out the teachings of its religion based on that culture's behavioral norms, you would probably be able to get the basics, right? That they all include stuff like lying is bad, don't kill people, etc., etc. But you would not ever assume that a member of that culture simply carried out the behavioral teachings of their religion, right? The assumption seems to be that human cultures are diverse and we can imagine tensions between, you know, religion and the state or religion and the beliefs of the individual. but it doesn't seem to be the case in non-human cultures, and that's kind of a shame, particularly for non-human cultures that produce a lot of player characters like elves and dwarfs. I mean, maybe for bugbears, we're not going to spend a lot of time discussing the intricacies of bugbear culture, because they're going to try and lump you upside the head with a mace, and that's really what bugbears are all about. But for dwarfs, if you're going to have dwarfs in your game, then what you want is something a little more like a religion that places demands on its followers that are extremely difficult to follow, rather than it just tells you, go ye and be a dwarf. Well, I'm already a dwarf, pal. Like gold, live in a mine, be good at handicrafts, you know, do all that stuff already. So I feel like there's a missed opportunity here, in that religions as examples of a culture are kind of one note, and after a while they become unnecessary. Whereas religions that exist in tension with the other values of a culture are more interesting. And that's why, first off, I find Hrugek, the god of bugbears, as mentioned last time, a little bit disappointing. But secondly, you definitely can't apply the logic of Hrugek, the god of bugbears, to any of the other species that you're going to have player characters come from and possibly live among. Anyway, that's all a bit negative, but unfortunately, this is not the strongest chapter in the book. I would be interested to hear, perhaps I should discuss alternatives to some of these things, but that might require more or longer episodes, so perhaps we'll return to it at some point. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed my slightly frustrated discussion of non-human deities. We'll be back with more, including possibly the aquatic elves, maybe some gnomes, all that kind of thing, in a future episode of Patron Deities. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.